Over the weekend, Colombian soldiers crossed into Ecuador and killed 21 guerrillas, including one of the top leaders of the FARC, the leftist rebel army that's been fighting the Colombian government for decades. Colombian officials discovered a FARC laptop, which they claim contains evidence that the rebels wanted to obtain radioactive material to make a so-called dirty bomb, and that Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez channeled $300 million to support the FARC. Both Venezuela and Ecuador sent troops to the Colombian border in protest, and today Venezuela mobilized naval, air, and armored units. President Chavez called Colombia the Israel of Latin America, while Ecuador and Venezuela demanded that the Organization of American States condemn the cross-border raid. The OAS stopped short of condemnation, however, and did say that Colombia violated international law. President Bush said the U.S. stands by its ally, Colombia. If you want to know more about the tensions between Colombia, Ecuador, and Venezuela, the roles of the U.S. and the FARC. Our number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Julia Swag, Senior Fellow and Director of Latin American Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. She's with us from a studio there. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation again.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
And what exactly happened over the weekend?
Well, as you said, over the weekend, late over Saturday night, I believe, the Colombian government obtained, I guess, actionable intelligence, which allowed them to pinpoint the exact location on the very northern border with Ecuador of a FARC encampment where Raul Reyes, the number two in command, was located. And they sent a helicopter, dropped some soldiers on the ground, followed up very rapidly with airstrikes, and, as you said, killed 20 people, include Reyes, and confiscated this laptop.
And was it widely known that the FARC had refuges, safe places to operate from inside Ecuadorian territory?
Absolutely. The FARC has, for probably decades, but at least for the last 8 to 10 years, used the northern part of Ecuador for its rear guard. The FARC's presence there helps sustain villages, rest and relaxation, and basically a rear guard area for their troops. So this is a longstanding presence. The Ecuadorian governments in the past have said that, and probably in the present, that their northern border is with the FARC, not with Colombia. So it's a longstanding presence.
There is also, you mentioned the laptop, which contained a lot of information, including, if you believe it, a longstanding relationship between the FARC and Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela.
Well, I don't know why we wouldn't believe it. Of course, the details of the nature of that relationship are hard to ascertain just on the basis of the transcriptions the Colombian government has given to the public. But the FARC and Hugo Chavez do have a relationship that goes back to early in this century. I don't know about earlier. And, of course, Hugo Chavez had been engaged in negotiating with the FARC to get some Colombian hostages released. We know about that relationship, but this seems to be a relationship that is deeper, that has financial and other security connotations. The ideological sympathies are articulated by both the Venezuelans and the FARC. So the relationship is not in doubt. It's just its nature that we're starting to see now.
And with that first prisoner exchange, which was, what, just a couple of 3 weeks ago,
right.
There was open support calling on European and the United Nations to drop the FARC as a terrorist organization and saying it was a legitimate organization.
Neil, in my view, that's the really crucial turning point in this episode. When Chavez comes out and says that the FARC should come off of the terrorist lists kept in Europe and by the United States, which has been supported by both Democrats and Republicans and pretty much across the globe by U.S. allies to see the FARC as terrorists, that was a real turning point because there looks as though Hugo Chavez is trying to get the FARC to have legitimate status as a belligerent group, which under international law would give it a different kind of status. And that really is a turning point and is what makes plausible some of the allegations that the Colombian government is now putting out there on the basis of what's in that laptop.
Yet a lot of people will mistrust almost anything the Colombian government says, particularly about its bitter rival, Hugo Chavez.
Well, you know, the Colombian government has not done a good job in its regional diplomacy. It has tethered itself very closely to the United States. And as the relationship with the United States and Venezuela has worsened for lots of reasons over the last several years, Colombia has also, and as, of course, we've seen governments in Ecuador, for example, in Bolivia, become a lot closer to Chavez, Colombia has become isolated as compared to the past within the Andean region. And that, in addition to it expecting the United States to protect it, I believe, at all cost, has put itself in a very awkward position within the entire hemisphere, a hemisphere which, of course, as you know, is historically sensitive about incursions into sovereignty. But, of course, the Ecuadorians in this case and Venezuela for many, many years, because of the porous borders, have had these rebel terrorist drug trafficking groups incurring into their sovereignty for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates was asked about this situation earlier today and said the United States does support its ally, Colombia, but asked if the United States would act to support Colombia in the event of a military confrontation breaking out. He said, first of all, he thought that was very unlikely and that further Colombia could take care of itself. On those two points, is this likely and can Colombia take care of itself?
Well, if you look at the numbers, the Colombian armed forces are much larger in terms of boots on the ground capacity than the Venezuelans, and also in terms of military capacity, I think. Is it likely? I have no idea, because I don't think any of us know what Chavez's intentions are, nor what the consequences, unintended perhaps, of putting that much military hardware and personnel on the border as he is doing. I hope it doesn't, but we don't know. And on the second point, can Colombia take care of itself? Also very, very hard to say. I think that there is a lot of pressure on Colombia right now, publicly and privately, from other countries in the hemisphere that have more influence than the United States does regionally to resist the temptation to be provoked by Venezuela.
Let's see if we get a caller in on the conversation. Diego's with us, calling from Denver, Colorado.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Go ahead.
Your show.
Thank you.
Well, just my comments were that I was actually born in Colombia and moved here when I was about 4 years old, and I'm 42 now and have been going back and forth frequently to visit. My parents are there right now, and I have to say that for the first time in all these years, there's actually a sense of pride, of progress, of decreased violence and security in Colombia, and most of the Colombians that I speak to attribute that to the leadership of the current president, President Uribe. And also wanted to note that about a month ago, there were worldwide peaceful demonstrations against the FARC, because, frankly, I think Colombians are just fed up with years of this war that just, frankly, terrorizes the whole country.
Mm-hmm. Also, the apparently deteriorating condition of Ingrid Betancourt, the former Colombian presidential candidate who's been held hostage by the FARC for many years now. And I wonder, Julia Zweig, how do you think that this situation is going to affect popular support for both the FARC and for President Uribe in Colombia?
Well, I was just in Colombia 2 weeks ago, and not only my presence, my visit there, but just generally, I would say there is no popular support for the FARC. And I think that this will boost, probably already has boosted Uribe's standing. Look, the fact that he goes and takes the risk of going in and whacking the number two in this armed insurgency that, as you say, has kept hostage and been brutal to its hostages for many years, that will enhance his standing. The FARC has no popularity. The problem in Colombia, and as in all of the countries of the Andean region, is that historically there has been no social contract, no institutions to withstand the temptations and the violence and the illegality of the drug trade. And so what we're seeing is the kind of I could see why Gates would say Colombia could take care of itself. It's now got much stronger armed forces, but that doesn't mean that the sources of the violence that support the FARC, that support the paramilitaries, have disappeared. But the caller's comment about a sense of progress is real, and I think this will reinforce it.
Julia Zweig, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
Julia Zweig, Senior Fellow and Director of Latin American Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, with us from a studio at the Council here in Washington, D.C. Michael Evans joins us now. He's Director of the Columbia Documentation Project at the National Security Archives and joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you, Neil.
And I wanted to ask you, Columbia retrieved documents from the FARC laptop, and there's some fascinating information in there.
Yes, there is. What we've learned only through the Colombian government, but the recovery of the laptop has led to some pretty extraordinary accusations that the Venezuelan government under Chavez, President Hugo Chavez, has formed a quote-unquote armed alliance with the FARC rebels in Colombia. In other words, that Venezuela is actively supporting a movement to topple the Colombian government. And also, of course, what you mentioned about the FARC's alleged efforts to acquire radioactive material to build a so-called dirty bomb.
Though what apparently they meant to do with that is less than clear. The Colombian government asserts to detonate a dirty bomb either in Colombia or, as I understand it, the interpretation could be that they were acquiring this material to sell it to the highest bidder.
Yeah, it's not clear. The information was revealed by Vice President Francisco Santos at a UN-sponsored disarmament conference in Geneva. And it's important to remember that so far these are really just allegations.
Mm-hmm. So there's no way to check and make sure that they're... Well, let me put it this way. How much do you believe?
Well, I'm not really sure how much is believable at this point or whether I have a basis for making that judgment. What we know is... we don't really know exactly what the significance of the information is. We don't know exactly who the FARC was talking to in Venezuela, for example. The communications that they did recover refer to someone named Angel, which could be Chavez. It could be somebody else in the Venezuelan government. But it's really not clear who that refers to. There's no indication that any money was actually ever delivered to the FARC.
Though there are questions about where are you going to store the dollars.
Yes. But as I recall from what I saw of those communications, by January, February, there was still some question as to whether or not the money was coming. And the dirty bomb plot is probably the most vague of all the allegations so far. Again, that was released by Vice President Francisco Santos. And he gives no indication even what country the FARC may have been trying to obtain the radioactive material from. But obviously, if any of it proves to be true, it's a very, very significant turn of events in the region and an extremely negative development for the FARC, which has suffered a series of political and military setbacks in recent months. And the Colombian government has no plans, or now has plans, I should say, to use the information found on the laptop to file charges against President Chavez in the International Criminal Court for supporting its armed insurgency. So it's all very significant, regardless of whether or not at this point it's been verified, which, of course, remains to be seen.
And we're talking with Michael Evans of the National Security Archive about the situation in northern part of South America. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And the man, the number two leader of the FARC who was killed, a man named Raul Reyes, or I guess that was his pseudonym, or nom de guerre, who was he? What role did he play?
Right. Raul Reyes was really the chief spokesperson in the FARC's seven-member secretariat, their political wing. And his death is really a huge blow to the FARC. He's the highest-ranking FARC leader ever killed in the conflict. And he's for many years been the public face of the FARC in its meetings with government officials and international observers. And
including, according to this laptop, meetings with the gringos, the United States.
Absolutely. He was the FARC's chief negotiator in all the peace talks with the Colombian government. And in that respect, he was at least symbolically, his death is a very significant setback for peace efforts to the extent that there were any with the FARC at this time. And also for the likelihood for movement on other issues, including the release of FARC-held hostages, some of whom have been languishing in FARC camps in the jungle for many years.
Let's get a caller in. This is David. David with us from Sand Springs in Oklahoma.
Hello.
Hi there.
I have a question. The right-wing paramilitary organizations that we hear about as well, how do their tactics differ from the FARC? And have they been deemed as a terrorist organization if their tactics are similar to the FARC?
Michael,
and then secondly, what's to keep somebody from programming that laptop to make it look like bad news?
that I can't tell you, but Michael Evans on the first point, there are right-wing organizations, extremely disreputable organizations in Colombia that have been involved in some of the worst atrocities, not to leave out the FARC, but nevertheless, they do exist as well.
Yes, of course, and they've gotten a lot stronger in the last 15 years or so. The right wing paramilitaries are on the U.S. list of foreign terrorist organizations, like the FARC and another guerrilla organization, the ELN. They are now in a process of demobilizing and disarming under a agreement that they made with the Colombian state. And this is really represents a big change from, say, 10 years ago, when the priority of the government of Andrés Pastrana, the then president of Colombia, was to negotiate a comprehensive peace with the FARC. Uribe's taken a much different tack. His priority has been on, you know, let's get the right-wing paramilitaries under control. Now, the complicating factor is that as this process has played out and information on another laptop, it's always about laptops in Colombia, has shown that there are pretty deep links within the Colombian government and the establishment and the military forces with these right-wing paramilitary forces, of course, who are also considered terrorists by the United States. So it's a complicated situation.
And it could become vastly more complex if the next Colombian cross-border raid is into a FARC camp in Venezuela.
Oh, absolutely. I no question about it.
Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Michael Evans is director of the Colombia Documentation Project at the National Security Archive. He joined us here in Studio 3A. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We'll